Well, I've got a pretty important subject this hour. I've never had this experience in my consulting room of having a woman come and saying, you know, my husband wants to please me all the time, and his response to my wishes are immediate and wholehearted, and I can't stand it. Now, how can we start a fight? I've never had that happen. Or I've never had anybody come in and say, Doc, our marriage is just riddled with peace and happiness and joy, and that's why we're here. Now, it is true that if you'll remember courting days, I remember my wife saying to me one time when we were courting, she said, Henry, I want to spend my life making you happy. Wow, imagine anybody wanting to do that for me. And do you know I believed her? And I said to her, Eva, I'll do the same for you. And that thing blew up the first week. We went skiing on our honeymoon. And when we came home, I just did the normal thing that I had done. A very predictable thing, that's all. I didn't take anybody by surprise. I just went to see the boys, as I'd been doing for years. And I was very enthusiastic about our skiing trip, and so we did something that we'd done many, many, many times. We planned a skiing trip for the next weekend, me and the boys. And so I went home to announce to my wife that next weekend I'd be out of town. This is our first weekend home. Now, mind you, this is her first chance to make me happy, just like she said. And she said, you aren't going. You're married now. And that's the first time it dawned on me what I had done. I wasn't about to be having any woman telling me what to do. Now, we had some very heated discussions. It took me like 3 days to put her where she belonged. And, of course, I went skiing, like any red-blooded young bridegroom ought to do. Right? I remember not too long after we were married, I decided that we would buy a new electric stove. And then after a while, I just got to thinking how I came to decide that. And the more I thought about it, the madder I got, because she had manipulated me into that. And I realized very quickly that my wife was smarter than me. Now, maybe some of you fellows have realized that your wife is smarter than you. Well, we had some pretty stormy first years, because, you see, what we were doing was... We were opponents. We weren't teammates. When I made my point, she lost hers. And when she made her point, I lost mine. It's kind of like playing tennis. Maybe some of you know about tennis. I like to play tennis. And I have some dear friends that I play with. I mean, good friends. We like each other. We admire each other. We respect one another. But when my friend that I admire and respect and like gets on the other side of the net, he's my opponent. The idea is to beat him. The idea is to outmaneuver him, to outsmart him. Now, once in a while, I play doubles with one of my best friends. Now, see, when I jump over the net, I've changed the whole thing. Now, instead of competing with him and outsmarting him and outmaneuvering him, now I've got to cooperate with him. If we both run to the net and the fellow lobs the ball over our heads and I say, why don't you stay back there? He said, why don't you stay back there? Well, I don't like to play back there. I don't either. You know, there are a lot of fellows that can have a good time playing singles, but they'll never make a doubles team. And the difference is the difference between cooperation and competition. You follow me? You've got the whole court to yourself when you're playing singles. You can do anything you please. You can't do that in doubles. If you both run into the same spot and your opponent puts it over there, See, you can't do that. You've got playing doubles is sort of like, if you can imagine, being tied together to a 12-foot rope, and you've got to work together. That's doubles. Now, some people say to me, we could discuss anything before we were married. That's right. That's all you had to do, is discuss. I remember one fellow saying to me, you know, I don't know what to do with this woman. She's just made an old grouch out of me. We got along so well before we were married. Now I'm an old grouch. And she says, I must have married the wrong fellow, because I'm never satisfied around him. All we do is fight. Now, before we were married, we never fought. And you see, they would say to each other before they were married, boy, we make a good pair. You see, we balance each other. What he meant by that was that he was a punctual fellow. When he said, I'll pick you up at 8 o'clock, he meant 8:00. If he got there 10 seconds before 8, he'd wait 10 seconds and then knock. And he'd get in there, and she was never ready. But he said that was good for him, you see, because she was more relaxed, and he was always punctual, 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 and that was a good balance. And he'd sit there and sputter to himself about, why is she late? But then there she comes downstairs. Wow, and she was pretty. And then they touched. You know how that was when you touched? Wow. And kissed, and he forgot all about his sputtering. And he'd say to her, are you going to be late after we're married? And she'd look up at him. You know how they do? And she snuggled up to him, and she said, honey, if I'm late, will you be mad at me? And he says, no. Well, you know, I love you so much, I'd just take just anything that you could do. But he didn't really think that she would be late. We balance each other, they said. He was kind of sloppy with his money, and she was so stingy with hers. And they would discuss money. You see, you can discuss money habits without coming to any conclusions if you don't have to spend the same money. You can talk about punctuality, and you don't have to settle anything unless you have to cooperate. But then you get married. Now, let me just build a foundation upon which you're going to build a marriage. Mind you, marriage is not a discussion group. In marriage, you settle things. Now, that's something else. Let me read this foundation. This has nothing to do with marriage, by the way, that I'm going to read to you. This has to do with the Philippians. Now, I don't know how many Philippians there were, but there were more than two, I think. This is in Philippians chapter 2. And let's start with the first verse, and I'm going to read 7 verses. Now, I'm talking about a basic attitude that you have toward anybody that you cooperate with. Now, he's addressing himself here to churches. And I'm saying that if you are a member of a church, that this is the basic fundamental attitude that you have toward the administration of the church. And it's that same attitude that is involved with marriage. If there be, therefore, any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if you're interested in pleasing him, if you're interested in what he has to say, if there is the love of God between you, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, if any bowels and mercies. Now, if those conditions don't exist, you might as well forget the rest of it, because you're not going to live up to it. Fulfill ye my joy. You want to enjoy working together in this church? Then this is how you do it. Gunnar, that's quite a trick for a bunch like this. Listen to this. That you be like-minded. My mind and your mind has to be the same. We have to work together. We have to be committed to the same thing. Like-minded. Having the same love. And being of one accord and of one mind. See, there's no room for I gotta be me and this kind of a thing. The minute you form a partnership, whether it's a business partnership or an athletic partnership or a marriage, you have given up your rights. Both of you. When you form a business partnership, say there's two of you, and you both own half of it, you still have to get together on how it's going to be run. Now, remind you, in marriage, your wife owns half of it. I mean, she owns half of it. And you, sir, own half of it. Now, that doesn't do you any good as far as management is concerned. That doesn't do you any good as far as how are we going to manage this partnership. All it tells you is that you both own half of it. Then you've got to come to a meeting of minds as to how to run it. I was in a business partnership one time. We had a kitchen cabinet shop, and we owned half of it apiece. Then we had to decide, how are we going to run it? And we voted that I would be the president. Mind you, my partner owned half of it. But I had the last word. Just an arbitrary arrangement, that's all. That's the only way that you can manage a partnership, is you've got to get together on who does what. Let nothing be done through strife. You don't have to fight about how to run it. If you and your partner are scrapping about how to run it, it's going to crack up. It's at best going to limp along. I have folks say, the lady says, I'm strict, and my husband is lenient. Now, what do they mean? All they mean is we disagree on how to handle things, that's all. You see, she is strict. That means that he disagrees with how she handles the kids. And so when he handles the kids, he's lenient. That's another way of saying, when I'm in charge, I'm going to do it the way I please. And she says, you just do that. And you're gone most of the time anyway. And so when I'm in charge, I'm going to do what I please. You run a business like that, and you run it into the ground real fast. You can't do what you please. You do what you agreed upon. If you're going to run a business. And you have to do that in marriage. You don't fight about things. You know, in a business, you don't say, let's get in a conference room and slug it out. Oh, there might be some heated discussions, but the purpose of a conference in a business is to decide how everybody is going to do it. You see, these are not just discussions where you swap opinions. In a business meeting, you decide things. This is the way it will be, and this is the way it will be when you're home alone. This is the way it'll be when I'm home alone. This is the way it's going to be when we're both home. I listened to a man a while ago telling me his wife had one of these odd ideas that it's the husband's job to manage the garbage. And every morning, he would kiss her goodbye, and she'd present him with this bag. And he'd take that bag and go out in the backyard and open a can and bang it in there and bang the cover shut. And for 28 years, he fought that job. 28. Now, that's dedication. And I tried to tell him, your attitude is all wrong, mister. Now, I've got my own ideas about who ought to handle the garbage. But if I'm going to handle the garbage, I ought to put my heart into it. You can just as well whistle your way to the garbage can if you quit fighting it. And I discovered that he did a lot of things that way, under protest. You see, it says here, do let nothing be done through strife or vain glory. I feel so deeply, people say. Now, if that means leave me alone, I got to do my own thing because I've got convictions. That's not how you run a partnership. Convictions are no convictions. Once the decision is made, you're bound. Playing tennis. You don't argue with the dimensions of the tennis court. Anywhere in the world you go to play tennis, it's the same court. Did you ever see a tennis court with a wavy line on one side? And you say, how come the wavy line? Well, we got sick of straight lines. And we wouldn't want to inhibit the people that make lines, you know. We want people to be free and creative. And he didn't feel like a straight line today. I mean, you laugh. That's stupid, isn't it? When you play tennis, let's play tennis. Anybody that knows anything at all about tennis knows that certain things are settled. The kind of a thing you use to hit it with is settled. The diameter of the ball is settled. The rules of the game is settled. You don't debate the rules. You don't debate the boundaries. The creativity comes in what you do within the rules and within the boundaries, and there's lots of room for creativity. Take, for instance, putting the kids to bed. 8 o'clock is bedtime. Well, there's lots of room for creativity there, isn't there, in getting in there. But you don't argue about bedtime for 10 years. Let nothing be done through vain glory. But in lowliness of mind, let each esteem the other better than themselves. Now, when you think about your wife, you are thinking about somebody who's got talent and ability in areas that are superior to yours. Isn't that right? And then she's got the lousy side, too. There are some things you're stupid to ask her to do them. Because you're better qualified. Now, when you think about your husband, you're thinking about somebody who has talent and ability far beyond yours. And you see, what we're thinking about is with a sense of admiration and appreciation for one another. And the job of the leader is to draw upon the talent and the ability of the people in the organization. Now, my, if we did that, we wouldn't have any problem with marriage, would we? So the prerequisite for settling anything is that you're sitting down to talk to somebody that you admire. Oh, sure, you got some faults, too. And maybe the business meeting is about you cutting it out. Stop it. You're doing wrong, and you know it. And there are a lot of business meetings in a business where we have to correct what's being done wrong. And there are many meetings like that in marriage where you sit down to set your wife straight. But another subject is to set your husband straight. And there are times when a wife needs to call a meeting to point out to her husband that he is doing wrong. Who do you think you are to tell me? I'm the head of this outfit. I am a half owner in this outfit. That's who I am. And you're doing wrong. You see, your wife has got just as big a stake in this thing as you have. She probably puts more into it than you do, and she's probably more knowledgeable about it than you are. And many, many times when I sat down with my wife, I simply had to say, tell me what to do. Now, that's just smart. Who do you turn to when you need advice? You turn to the smartest person you can find. And many times that's your wife. We esteem the other better than ourselves. Look not every man on his own things. In the consulting room, that's what you see. You talk to a lady who's preoccupied with poor little old me. And think the way I'm being treated. And then you talk to her husband, and who's he talking about? He's talking about poor, big, strong me. And look how I'm being treated. Thinking just about your own things. Now, that's not the idea in a partnership at all. You just don't think about your own things. You're thinking about the best interests of the partnership. Is that how you do it? I'm the head. I make all the decisions. Anybody that says that just does not understand what leadership is. You know, I've been the head of a restaurant business, and I am the least informed person in the organization about food. What are you doing being the president? Well, the president's job is to see that things get done. We have people working for us that are smarter than me. We had a fellow who has a master's degree in food administration. He was so far ahead of all of us he was in complete charge and had full authority to decide what the menus would be and what the flavors would be and how the cooking would be done. And he just worked for us. He was an employee. But he had power. You know, there isn't anybody in the organization that got the idea that he was the president just because he had some information. See, the president's job is to see that we make maximum use of the information of the people in the organization. Gentlemen, that's another way of saying work as hard as you can. Did you get that? Do you know what's wrong with a lot of our women today, I think? A lot of our women are not effectively busy. A lot of our women don't have enough authority. They don't make enough decisions. They're too smart to be doing what they're doing. Any woman that makes a career out of cleaning a house, why, anybody that takes more than a half a day to clean a house has got to be wealthy. Now, you all know that. You know, there are ladies that say, why do I have to dust this top? You know, by that time, my wife has dusted four other tops because she's busy with something else, and her job is to get past the dusting. Why do I have to slave over a hot stove? Other women create beautiful meals. Other people are called chefs. Not me. I'm a slave over a hot stove. How else do you create nice meals? I think that it is important that a woman draws on her talent and her ability. And if you're the leader, your job is to see to it that she is effectively busy. There are a lot of women that are not effectively busy. Now, the smarter your wife is, the tougher a job it is to help her become the best possible person that she could become. I sold a business, and it wasn't long after I sold it, a general manager came to me and said, Doc, what can I do to come back to work for you? Now, why? You'd think he'd say, why are we glad to get rid of him? Because he associates me with his success. And one of the most important jobs of the head of a marriage is to ensure the organization's success. That is, your wife's success. What are we talking about? We're talking about two people who mean to get together, who have a terrific respect and admiration for one another, and you're going to get together and eliminate the disagreeable things that you do. You got to cut it out. That's what I tell my employees. You got to cut it out.
You have a right to expect your husband to be a gentleman around the house. If I were a lady and a husband comes in, "What's been going on around here?" Any of my employees talk to me like that, then I'd say, "Look, cool it. Calm down. Who do you think you're talking to? Do you think this is a kindergarten?" I'd say, any man that comes in like that, "What's going on around here?" I say to you, tell him to cool it. "I'm perfectly happy to discuss anything with you, but I expect you to act like a big boy, not like a little boy. You don't expect the head of anything to have temper tantrums. You don't expect the head of anything to neglect what he's doing. There's a price to pay to manage a partnership. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in a form of God, he thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he made of himself no reputation, and he took upon him the form of a servant, and he was made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross." And that's what a man's got to do. When you enter into marriage, you take upon yourself the form of a servant. Do you know what Jesus said? Does it make any difference to you what he said? He said, if you want to be the chief, be a servant. The president serves his company. The husband serves his wife. I mean by that, he sees to it that she stops being negative, that she straightens up. And I think that would help a lot if a husband was unwilling to put up with his wife's baby behavior and help her grow up. I'm talking about a friendly fellow, mind you. I'm talking about a man who's walking in the Spirit. I'm talking about a person that you can depend on. And when he walks into the house, here comes a cheerful, happy, kindly, gentle man. Your wife's entitled to that. She ought to feel entitled to that. And if you don't act that way, she ought to tell you to cut it out. Now, I'm not talking, ladies, about being snippy. You see, I don't care how your husband behaves. That doesn't give you license to act like a kid. Or just because your wife is difficult doesn't give you any right to be difficult. Every man has to take on the responsibility of presenting to the organization his very best. And you become obedient unto death. And so a man and his wife has to sit down and decide, how are we going to run it? And that should bind you both. Just think of some of the issues that come up when you're married. When you're single, think of some of the things you got to do. Let's start right away in the morning. You got to get up. Well, some people fight about that. This fellow that I was telling you about, he said me and my wife would balance each other. Well, he was the kind of fellow who would bound out of bed and shave and get dressed and into the kitchen. And where's his wife? She didn't get up yet. And he said, "Get up." And she said, "Oh." You know, that really, that's how to turn your husband on in the morning.
"Can't you get a donut down the street?"
See, you've got to even get together on how you get up. And when do you make the bed? Before you go to bed tonight? And what condition should the drawers be in? Is a drawer something you aim at? Now you can just take... Oh, my time's up. Well, you can just take that little thing that I'm telling you here, and you can go right down the line, and you can realize the multitude of decisions that you have to make. In order, you see, when you're living by yourself, you can make all those decisions that you want all by yourself. Spend as much time as you want washing, sitting on a stool. One lady was, ooh, she just made her mad. Her husband would never put the lid down. And she'd fall in. Well, you laugh, but that isn't funny if it's you. Or which way do you install a toilet roll? Just think of the issues you have to settle just in the bathroom. Well, you can move into all of the rest of the rooms. And now what I'm trying to say is that marriage is simply a matter of two people approaching one another in this attitude. And so I would suggest that the two of you take that chapter, the second chapter of Philippians, and you go over it together and see how close you come. And if you approach your marriage that way, you won't be a candidate for the consulting room.